Hi, I'm Marcus Edwards, and I'm interested in talking to people who are interested in talking to people who are interested in having a conversation about their future. Does that make any sense? I don't know. Anyway, welcome to Recruiting Trailblazers. Very excited to welcome my guest today to Recruiting Trailblazers. Amanda Halley is the founder and CEO of Mindful Growth Partners. She specializes in equipping people and businesses with the skills, processes, and tools to be future-ready, sustainable organizations. Her approach is anchored in fostering transparency, adaptability, and conscious decision-making, ensuring individuals and teams not only navigate but excel amidst change. With 15 plus years of experience, she's been privileged to build, operate, consult, and advise over 50 diverse companies, including Google, Warburg Pincus, Jane Technologies, and Life Labs Learning. So welcome to the podcast, Amanda Halley. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing really well. It's very exciting to be here. Thrilled to be a part of this podcast.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that we're going to get the chance to talk today, because one of the things I'm most excited about is that you just started a new, brand new AI newsletter, Amanda, called Unraveling AI, which is something that we all desperately need to do over the coming months and years. So can you tell us a bit about what you're working on over there and looking to achieve with this new newsletter?
Yeah, little known fact about me, I am a finance and business major, and started off my career in currency trading. So I then went into HR. I spent time building out HR companies or building out HR teams, and then spent some time working on product partnerships and working very heavily in the data space, people data space. And so I've always been really passionate about data, and I think data is like what underlies everything AI, and AI has a huge potential for HR and people leaders in organizations. And so for me, I have been very energized by the entrance of accessible generative AI. And so when ChatGPT became a big thing at the end of last year, I kind of jumped on board and started testing it out and learning and experimenting. And the newsletter is a way to share for everyday people to share how they're using it at work and in their lives, because I think there is a lot of fear and uncertainty about what it means and what it will do to people's jobs and people's lives.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we're going to get into that, because yeah. I think that's one of the main topics to cover, isn't it?
Exactly.
And so you've really immersed yourself in AI, which is great. You went from currency trading over to sort of the people, business, and HR, which is a strange sort of transformation, isn't it? I'm not sure there's as much money in HR as there is in currency trading, but what prompted that, just briefly?
I ended up in the client service side of currency brokerage.
Right.
And I found that I really loved dealing with people and difficult people, and it came naturally to me. And that segued nicely into HR. Yeah. And the challenges that come up every day.
You're a people person. More than a currency person.
I guess so.
It just sounds, you know, being a currency trader just sounds really fancy though. Anyway, so let's talk about AI. Let's dive straight in. How would you rate your skills so far? Where would you put yourself?
I actually did this. It was part of my newsletter. One of the questions is, how would you rate your AI know-how? And I said a 6 or a 7.
Oh, that's very modest.
I do think that no one is an expert in the generative AI space right now. I think we are all, it's so new. There is so much constant change, so many, you know, iterations that are happening continuously that we're all learners.
Yeah, we are. We're all diving in and doing a little bit here and there. But I do think that what you're doing is very clever, because I think that people like you are going to be in more and more in demand. And I think, and I've said this on the podcast a couple of times recently as well, that There's a lot of recruiters who are out of work right now who've been let go in this sort of recent downturn, especially internal recruiters. And I think if you become somewhat of an expert, however that's measured, I don't know, but if you become somewhat of an expert as a recruiting specialist with AI skills, and you can go into organizations and say, I can show you how to leverage AI in the best way, the tools, et cetera, then you're going to make your way to the top of the pile, because there's, you know, hundreds of recruiters applying for every recruiting job right now. And so I think that could be a great way for people to sort of emerge from the pack, don't you think?
I completely agree. I think that the future of recruiting teams is probably on the leaner side. And that is because those who are going to be in the function will be able to leverage tools, whether it's, you know, I think the, you know, the recruiting coordinator is likely, you know, maybe this is a thing of the past. I think there are too many tools out there that can do a lot of the roles and responsibilities.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, that's a very prescient remark you just made, that the future of recruiting teams are going to be a lot leaner. And I think I have to agree with you, although I'm not happy to agree with you, because I want everybody to get back to work. But in the last recovery that we had after the pandemic decline, we racked and stacked recruiters like they were going out of fashion. This time, everybody that I've been talking to on the podcast and elsewhere is predicting, just as you just said, that it's going to be done differently next time. And instead of racking and stacking recruiters, I think people are going to, and companies are going to, look at ways that they could potentially optimize their recruiting processes, minimize, or at least sort of make flexible their recruiting workforce, so they don't have to keep, every time there's a dip in the economy or an improvement in the economy, they don't have to keep hiring and firing people all the time. So it's a very long-winded way of saying what everybody already knew. But next time around, it might not be quite the party for internal recruiters as it was last time. What do you think? I mean, you said yes, right?
I completely agree. I think that there's just there's so much access to information to be able to better understand, like, data and patterns. And I was just on a recruiting panel the other day with the CEO of a company called SquarePeg, and she was actually talking about how a resume scraping tool is one piece of data, right? You know, you're going to hire, you hire from these schools, from these types of companies, these roles, but that doesn't give you, like, actually enough information to understand, can a person do this job at this stage of this company, right? And so I think that the future is being able to access, like, this person worked at this company at this time, and during that time they were, like, a Series A, or they were about to IPO, or they just IPO'd, and meaning, like, they worked on these projects and they worked with this tech stack. And so I think that you're not going to need the people to be doing all of that due diligence and gathering all that information. You'll be able to leverage tools that can pull that for you, which is powerful.
Yeah. I mean, that was going to be, you know, one of my big questions is how, in the talent acquisition and recruiting space, where do you see the opportunity for AI to, you know, revolutionize our industry? Is it just going to take away some of the menial tasks? Or is it going to completely revolutionize the way that we do the job and the way that the TA operates and the way that, you know, staffing agencies operate? Is it going to play a massive part, or is it just going to be a bit player?
I think that, you know, in the shorter term, it is going to handle all of the administrative and all of the things that are monotonous.
Yes. Well, I've got a list of them here. Do you want me to read a couple of them to you?
Yeah.
Stuff like resume and CV parsing, automated job description generation, candidate screening and ranking, chatbots for initial screening, very, very useful, very powerful. Although, you know, it takes the human bit out, which I think is still very important. And that's where the opportunity still lies for us to be successful as recruiters, is what we can do as humans and how we can differentiate ourselves. Personalized candidate engagement. Yeah, I'm not sure about that. Diversity and inclusion initiatives, obviously. Predictive analytics for candidate fit. Onboarding, content create. And it goes on. The list goes on. Obviously, there's so many things that it can But that still requires people to know how to properly leverage it and to use it and to use the tools. I mean, it's not going to eliminate all the human beings, but it is, I believe, even though a lot of people are trying to say very optimistically, it's not going to eliminate jobs. It is going to eliminate jobs, isn't it?
I think it will. And there are going to be jobs that will be eliminated. And that's just the way, like, the progression that happens with normal cycles of new technology, but also it's a opportunity to really up-level skills. And I think that that's where, you know, companies need to be spending their time thinking about how they're both using these new technologies and also providing their teams with the skills for the future. Because if they're not doing those things, then we just are increasingly seeing a like divide in who's getting the jobs and who isn't. And I think that's a scary part for me, is like that gap widens.
Do you, you use quite a few of the tools, don't you? So what are your favorite tools? Is ChatGPT basically the engine for everything? Is everything else just a different paint job on the top of ChatGPT?
ChatGPT is one of the large language models that is behind many of these tools that are doing things like synthesizing and summarizing data. I think there's like two big buckets of like the foundational things that generative AI are doing. One of those is synthesizing and summarizing information, and the other is creating new content, generating content.
Yeah.
And so the large language models allow that because they have so much information to pull from that, you know, it can recognize patterns, and basically it is like a predictive engine is what ChatGPT is doing. And so yes, ChatGPT I think is one of them. I use ChatGPT all the time. I pay for the $20 a month for the ChatGPT Plus to be able to use their advanced analytics.
What do you use it for? I mean, give us some use cases and some, you know, tangible benefits to how you're using it.
Yeah. I mean, with things like employee engagement data, for example, or, you know, meeting notes, and I will ask it to summarize, provide the key takeaways, provide the action items by person, right? I think that's
right.
One of the ways. I think also, you know, run basic analysis on these numbers, and it will give you it'll slice and dice in any way that you want.
You possibly want. Right? Like, and I like what you said about, you said summarize, synthesize, or create from scratch. Those are kind of the main buckets of its capabilities. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of people use it for, you know, create a first draft of this policy, or, you know, create the job description, create the interview schedule based on these people and these roles, develop the interview questions based on, you know, these competencies, create, you know, culture and values question, behavioral questions. And it's taking a ton of this work that took hours. And
But I mean, we're trusting it to. The thing that worries me, and, you know, I've used it a little bit, and sometimes what it's come up with, especially from a content creation standpoint, is very generic. It's very wishy-washy. It's not that punchy. And as a writer, I think, I mean, obviously one of the biggest threats is to writers and to journalists and to content creators in general, their very existence is under threat. But then you see what it produces and you just think, well, you could probably do a lot better than that. It might be okay for a first draft, but if it gets too good, then, you know, nobody would need to write a book ever again. Nobody will need to write a screenplay, or and the entertainment industry will be decimated. So hopefully we're a long way away from that. Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. I was talking to somebody about the, you know, in education and for kids, and it's like, you know, what, you know, writing papers, right? Like that might be a thing of the past, and it's going to be moving towards, you know, presentations and having to showing judgment and problem solving and critical thinking, like in real time, which is.
Yeah. I mean, how else are you going to test if generating papers is as easy as just, you know, typing in a few commands to ChatGPT, then educators are going to have to find out a different way of figuring out who's good and who's not so good, and who's got it and who hasn't. Haven't really given that much thought before, but I imagine there are huge ramifications in the education industry, right?
Yeah. I mean, I listened to a podcast by the Khan Academy CEO talking about the tools that they're developing for, you know, for tutoring, for, you know, for kids in education. It's just, it's fascinating that it's essentially, it translates very well to, I think, the world of HR and people, because it's this idea of having like a tutor, like a, whether it's a tutor, like a assistant, a co-pilot who you are constantly like providing updates on your preferences and working styles and things so that it can help you. And it's interesting to I think they're thinking about it for kids, but it's a similar, there's similar use cases on the HR and people side.
This episode of Recruiting Trailblazers is brought to you by Vertical Move. Vertical Move builds world-class digital transformation, product and software engineering teams by sourcing only the top 5% of passive technical talent. Vertical Move's AI-powered digital skills assessment and paired programming protocols exemplify the most qualified candidates, thus expediting the hiring process and saving customers valuable time and resources. Vertical Move, for technical talent you can trust. I mean, yeah, the upside to all of this is phenomenal. And if it's used correctly and used in a good way, as opposed in an evil way, then, you know, it's all good news. But I mean, I read the other day, actually, that, you know, the president had to or did issue like a wide ranging executive order, which aims to safeguard against threats posed by AI, ensuring that, you know, the bad actors don't use the technology to develop, you know, horrific weapons and or mount supercharged cyber attacks or stuff like that. The laws around AI are probably only just being developed, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And I think a lot of it is there are some rules and regulations, right? New York has some around AI tools and making that transparent in the recruitment process, how you use them and what they're used for, and that you have, that you're auditing those tools regularly. I think right now for, you know, your everyday company, it's the responsibility of the leaders to make sure that the vendors that they're using are auditing properly, that they know how the vendors have developed, like what models they're using.
So transparency is a big one, isn't it? I mean, because AI is getting so good. I mean, it blurs the lines between whether you're talking to a human being or interacting with a human being or not, or just a computer. But I think it's important for companies and organizations to remain transparent and let people know when they're being dealt with by an AI rather than a normal human being. I think it's dangerous if we don't know who we're dealing with.
Right. I think companies too, like there's, I believe it's Medium, the publishing platform, they've kind of banned use of generative AI tool to create content, but you can use it, but they want you to cite it.
Yeah.
Which I think is really smart. And I think that when I talk to companies, I say that they should be keeping track of how they're using, what kind of prompts they're using, where they've used tools, because it's who knows what will happen down the line, what we will need to be documenting and tracking.
Yeah. And they're developing tools, obviously, to detect content that has been written by AI. But then all you need to do is to say to ChatGPT, please make sure that this content that you are about to write for me is undetectable by any of the tools that are currently developed. I mean, it's just going to be a battle down the road, isn't it, for who's ahead in the sort of AI detection stakes. The whole thing is really wild. What other tools are there outside of, you know, ChatGPT, which everybody knows about? Are there any other like mind-blowing tools that I haven't heard of yet?
There's a tool that I've just started using. It's an app and it's called Oasis. And I take
my favorite band.
And it's a good one. basically you can just like, if I'm out walking the dog or I'm in the car and something comes to my mind and I want to just like jot it down and then kind of, you know, reformat that or turn it into something. I have them like kind of elaborate on it. It's it's just a way to kind of take your note, take notes and kind of like,
yeah,
pull these like stream of consciousness and turn it into something. I have been enjoying that. I think the regular, like things like Canva, their AI functionality is awesome.
Yeah.
And I use that all the time. Notion has an AI tool, which is also great and so useful. Those are like the key ones that I use. And then the kind of the chatbots, the ChatGPT, Perplexity is another one. Claude is the LLM from Anthropic.
Yeah. You mentioned to me that you think there's a gender gap in AI usage. You know, what's the reason behind that? What is that gender gap and why is that happening?
Yeah, so Charter has done a ton of research and they've pulled stats on, you know, the use of AI by women versus men. And the percentage is 35 versus 48 of women versus men using AI at work. I think that a lot of the roles that women traditionally have are more of the roles that will be replaced by AI. And I've read that in quite a few studies. And so I can imagine that like there is that fear from women to be using AI.
Right.
I think.
So you're saying that, maybe there's a lot of like content creators, you know, female content creators who are perhaps nervous about embracing AI because they potentially feel that that could replace them down the road or, you know, or maybe ethical considerations as well. Maybe I think a lot of people think, you know, that AI is cheating to a certain extent. And as I was saying earlier, it's like, does AI really have a personality? I mean, maybe you can give it a personality through asking it to sort of, I don't know, mirror a specific writer or a style or a theme or something like that. But as I said to you, I've found that in my usage of it, the stuff that it's written is pretty bland, pretty generic, and it would need spicing up, I think, for it to, there's a certain flavor to the writing that AI does. And I'm probably just not giving it the right commands. Cause if you said to it, you know, write like Shakespeare, which I've done and it's quite amusing, or write like, you know, Stephen King or whatever, then it probably gives it a much more pointed sort of flavor. But if you just ask it to write an article on a specific topic with some instructions and some content ideas, then it just generally spits out stuff that's sort of, you know, fairly bland.
I agree. I found that it's useful if you have no idea where to start and you want just a very quick, like, you know, V1 of something, and then you can take it and go from there. Or you already have something and you want it to review, edit, augment, that then you can kind of go back and forth with like a chatbot to ask it to, you know, update sections or review certain sections and give different options for the way that things are, you know, written. Overall, it is pretty bland and generic. And I find that sometimes I spend more time just asking it to write me a LinkedIn post. And then I'm like, I don't know why I spent so much time kind of working on this because my own version is 10 times better and is me. And
I mean, that's the interesting thing about all of this is that maybe the opportunity lies right now for people who don't use AI, because if everybody's using AI, everybody's going to sound the same. And not using AI, you can clearly differentiate yourself or differentiate your tone or as I said earlier, your style. Because it's not perfect. It's not even close to perfect. And I mean, it's definitely a tool, like you said, V1. I mean, whatever you're doing, V1 or synthesizing content or summarizing content, very, very handy for that kind of stuff. You could have it listen to a podcast and then just say, you know, what are the 10 most important points or the 3 most important points? Maybe they should do that with our podcast today.
I wonder what they would be.
Maybe we haven't got there yet.
Yeah.
Have we said anything interesting so far? I think we're doing
it's been
okay.
A lot of words. But I do think it's the more that, you know, women versus, like, I think that the more that different groups interact with it, the more that it will, or the less biased that it will be, because, you know, it needs the examples. It needs more use from a variety of perspectives and a variety of backgrounds. And so I do think it is really important for folks to lean in and embrace it and try it, right?
Exactly. Because there's no guarantee that AI isn't biased. In fact, I did a bit of research on that as well. And it said AI bias is an anomaly in the output of machine learning algorithms due to the prejudiced assumptions made during the algorithm development process or prejudices in the training data. And so there's no guarantee that the tool that you're using or the AI that you're embracing isn't biased against, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to achieve. So there's all sorts of inherent problems with all this stuff. What do you think? I mean, in our industry and, you know, in the recruiting industry, in the talent industry, in the people industry, what's the best way to get your head around this stuff? Is there a book that's been written or a documentary, or what do you do to become an expert? What are you doing?
There are a few things that I would suggest. I think one is, you know, take some of these 101 courses, right? LLMs 101, Generative AI 101. Google has a suite of these modules on the basics, the foundations of AI and generative AI. So I think having some type of understanding of, you know, where we are now and where we've come from, because AI is not new, is important. And then I think really just trying it, right? And trying prompts and learning. So whether that's like putting 30 minutes on your calendar every morning to just play around in ChatGPT or Claude or Perplexity or one of these, I think that's really, you have to be in it to understand what the responses, how they come back, and to know whether they work or don't work. And then I think also, you know, setting up demos with different AI vendors just to see what's out there. It's free and it gives you a sense of what products are, you know, what they're doing with AI and with LLMs. And then you can start to ask questions and get, you know, test your own knowledge as well.
Yeah.
Those would be my three.
Yeah. What's the difference, by the way, between AI and generative AI? Are they pretty much the same thing?
You know, AI is really like the pattern recognition. And then generative AI is creating new content based on recognizing patterns and predicting what the expected next piece of the pattern would be.
Yeah. What have we got to look forward to with AI and the development of all these AI tools? Apart from, you know, when AI completely takes over and then we're all doomed.
My hope is that it becomes a collaborative, like, learning journey, and that companies start to offer, you know, education and start to do more experimentation collectively, so that, you know, teams and businesses can optimize the way that they operate and look at kind of their business systems and structures and start to be smarter about, you know, this question of, should I be doing this or should a machine be doing this? I was at this charter summit, and the head of AI for Microsoft said that every time I have to do something, I think to myself, what, should I do this or should a machine do this? And I think that's an interesting, like, I think that, you know, down the road, that might be something that all of us kind of think about in our heads. I don't know if it's scary or exciting. I'm not sure yet, but it is something to.
That's a good one. Good. Maybe that's the title of your book. Should I be doing this or should a machine be doing this? I think that every morning when I'm making a cup of tea, because I don't have a tea machine. I've got a coffee machine, but I don't really like drinking coffee. So I have to make my cup of tea by hand.
Do you use the microwave or
a kettle? No, I use a proper kettle, old school, milk and sugar, the way it's supposed to be drunk. So, no, fantastic. Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of fun things happening in this crazy world of AI right now. And I really appreciate you coming along. And thanks for sharing some of your insights and wisdom on recruiting trailblazers today. Let's definitely keep in touch. And we'll chat again soon.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Marcus.
Hey, it's fun. Thanks.